one religions, God has not been brought about by the people. Rather, it was God who created the human beings. And in that understanding, it is God who can remove the people, his creatures. It's been mentioned in the Quran that if you are going to apostate from your religion, Allah will bring a new people. My second point is that God, as the creator, he has the power to remove the people. Creatures who are created by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, they do not have the power to remove God. Now, the main answer, according to these were some, introduction to this question. We are answering this question from an Islamic perspective, and we need to pay attention to how Islam looks at the concept of justice. At least in three domains, Islam has many things to say regarding justice or adl. First of all, in theology; second, in ethics; and third, in jurisprudence. According to the religion of Islam, you know, all the Muslim denominations, they believe in God, they believe in the prophethood of Prophet Muhammad, and they believe in resurrection on the day of judgment. Now, according to Shia and also some other Muslim denominations, adl is one of the principles of belief, which they call it usul al-madhab, the principles of their denominations. So as Shia and also the Mu'tazilis and many other groups, they believe in the fact that justice of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is one of the basic beliefs of us. Which means that if you do not believe in justice of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, you cannot call yourself a Shia or a Mu'tazili. Which again means that according to our understanding, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is free from any oppression, any injustice. So this is the way Islam looks at the concept of justice, or at least these Islamic denominations.
Yeah.
Even when it comes to sustenance, our belief is that sustenance is given to the people according to justice, and many other beliefs that we have. So justice is so important in Islam that at least for some Islamic denominations, it is now one of the principles of faith to that Islamic denomination. When it comes to akhlaq and morality, we have many verses in the Quran and the narrations asking people to act upon justice. I will mention later in the program some of these verses. And they mention in Islamic ethics that adala or justice means to have a kind of moderation in your life between, to have the virtues and to be away from indecent acts. When it comes to jurisprudence, still we see that adala is a very important concept. For example, in some Islamic rules and verdicts, we see that adala, or being just, is one of the conditions. If a person wants to be a judge, he needs to be a just person. If a person wants to witness in the court, he needs to be just. If a person wants to lead a prayer, a salatul jama'ah, he needs to be a just person. So when we put together all these, we see how great and how highly regarded is the concept of justice according to the religion of Islam.
Sheikh, sorry for interruption. The point that I think can be asked from this philosopher is that in addition to that beautiful distinction that you made, that you said that which God you are talking about, then we need to ask him, which religion are you talking about? Have you exactly studied, for example, other religions like Islam, and you found out that there are some, let's say, ambiguities and some contradictions that made you say such a thing? And second, Are you really talking about the religions, or you are talking about the followers of the religions?
That's a very good point. Yeah,
yeah, because when you are talking about the followers of the religions, they might not be, the right representatives of the religion. The religion is something, even we can see it in our own societies. Islam is very beautiful, the religion of peace, but some groups like ISIS and others come and defame Islam and distort the message and the picture of Islam. So we have to distinguish again between Islam and its followers.
And that is why I'm referring him to the sources, to the genuine sources of at least our religion, Islam. I said that in theology, justice is one of the basic principles in Islam. We have it in theology, in ethics, and in fiqh. If I have time, I quickly refer to some verses of the Quran which tell us how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala looks at the concept of justice. For example, that is what you mentioned. Yeah. If you want, as a philosopher, if you want to know Islam, please refer to the main sources of Islam, which is at least, which is the Noble Book of Quran and the genuine and authentic narrations. And if some Muslim, they do some injustice in the name of Islam, you have to check it with the source. Are they acting upon Islam or not?
True.
This is the very good point that you mentioned. Now, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that, أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَوْ يُوْ هُوْ هَا فَيْثِ كُونُوا قَوَّامِينَ لِلَّهِ شُهَدَاءَ بِالْقِسْطِ. Be maintainers as witnesses for the sake of Allah of justice. So, كُونُوا قَوَّامِينَ لِلَّهِ شُهَدَاءَ بِالْقِسْطِ. Be maintainers of justice as witnesses for the sake of Allah. وَلَا يَجْرِمَنَّكُمْ شَنَآنُ قَوْمٍ عَلَىٰ أَلَّا تَعْدَلُوا. This is one of the most beautiful verses of the Quran about justice, which I think I need to be explained in the following session.
Inshallah. Thank you very much, dear Sheikh Murtada, for your quite informative explanations, and your respected listeners for staying tuned with Q&A in Islamic Beliefs from IRB English Review. I hope that you join us again in our upcoming session. Till then, I'd like to ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to keep you protected. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Inna fi al-jannati nahran laban. Inna fi al-jannati nahran laban. Ali wa Hussein. لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا وبهذا الحب لا نخشى المحن.
Round the world with reporters. Health systems in the EU are buckling under pressure from new coronavirus cases resulting from the holiday period. New variants are raising concern. Businesses remain closed. These have been identified as major challenges for the Portuguese government, which has just taken over the rotating presidency of the EU.
One of the first priorities is vaccination. Vaccination is the light at the end of the tunnel of this pandemic.
Critics say vaccination should currently be the only priority for EU authorities. The UK is approving jabs weeks ahead of the 27-country bloc. Secrecy surrounds the number of vaccines going to each EU nation and how many people have so far received the jab. The European Commission says it is working with the European Centre for Disease Control to set up an information website. And that cannot happen soon enough because a major criticism of the vaccination program in the EU relates to a lack of data. It is simply impossible to scrutinise or compare the performances of member states. We have been talking to EU citizens in Brussels about the speed of the vaccines rollout.
My father is 76. I don't know where it will be for him. It will be maybe in 4 or 5 months. That's quite slow.
It's not easy. Yeah. It's too slow. I think the priorities are not the best one.
Trying to understand why it's so slow in EU. I don't know. Maybe we need more testing to be sure of the vaccine.
Me, I really want to live like a normal person, like you. We like the way we did. So if I have to be vaccinated, I will be vaccinated.
Cracks continue to appear within the EU's unity as countries move to secure vaccines independently of the European Commission. Adding to the woes is news that production of the Pfizer vaccine is being temporarily delayed. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Thousands of people, including leaders and supporters of the far right, take to the streets of Vienna to protest against COVID restrictions.
This isn't the first protest of its kind here in Austria, and it comes as the country is in its third lockdown. That lockdown is expected to end on the 24th of January.
With hardly any masks in sight and no distance between them, demonstrators only booed and whistled when asked by the police to observe the safety rules. Many of the banners, signs and slogans repeated claims that the pandemic was part of a conspiracy in which the World Health Organization and Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates were complicit.
Are you not worried about contracting the virus?
I'm not worried about the virus because it's not dangerous for 99.9% of the population. It's not dangerous. It's just dangerous for very old, very sick people. And yes, for these people, influenza too is dangerous. And COVID-19 is not more dangerous than influenza.
These claims have been strongly refuted by experts who cite evidence-based data to prove that COVID is far more deadly and significantly more contagious than seasonal flu. In fact, with the emergence of new variants, experts believe we're now in the most dangerous time of the pandemic. Demonstrators also shouted slogans against the government's vaccination program that's already well underway.
The people should decide for ourselves, and not because the law is decided for us. We want to decide, is this our body, is this our brain, our life, and not the life of the government.
With the rate of new infections still considered way too high, the government is expected to announce a further tightening of restrictions. Omalevsky, Vienna.
During the COVID-19 pandemic, millions of Britons have been sent home by struggling businesses and employers to sit it out. To prevent a spike in redundancies and mass unemployment, the government has introduced a furlough scheme to pay 80% of their wages up to £2,500 a month. In August 2020, the Eat Out to Help Out scheme revived the hospitality industry a little, and businesses have been offered grants to keep their heads above water until spring. But many might be wondering where all this money is coming from. The truth is, the Bank of England is using quantitative easing to keep government borrowing costs down. In other words, the bank is printing money for the government to spend. The adverse effects of the Bank of England printing more than £450 billion to get the country out of the COVID-19 crisis will be felt in the very near future and by ordinary working people, because most of this money will invariably end up in the pockets of the rich and influential, and very little will trickle down. Whereas before, money flowed in a circular fashion in the economy, with ordinary workers paying mortgages and bills to property and business owners, who went on to spend that money on more assets and living the life, money is now flowing on a straight line from the Bank of England, where it's being printed, into the pockets of ordinary working people, and then into the pockets of the rich. By the end of the 2020 to 2021 financial year, the UK is expected to set the highest recorded level of borrowing in peacetime history.
The system is fundamentally flawed. Rich-poor division has got more extreme. The type of jobs coming in are not the old secure, well-paid jobs. They're the insecure, low-paid, temporary jobs. And so you're looking at something where, at the moment, is a sort of the pumping of the money is keeping the thing alive. But as soon as you start ending these programs, the realities of a collapsing economy, not just in the UK, the yellow vests, Brexit, and Trump are all the result of a fundamental insecurities going on right the way across.
After the pandemic, the rich will go on to buy more stocks and bonds and property, and the surplus money in the economy will lead to its devaluation, pushing ordinary people with fixed salaries further down the economic ladder. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Italy topped 1 million COVID jabs since the start of the vaccination campaign on December 31st, according to the latest data. Out of over 1.5 million doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine delivered across the country since December 27, more than 60% have already been injected, the highest number of first doses administered in the EU. However, some Italian media have been warning in recent days about an increasing number of medics and health workers not willing to be vaccinated.
Vaccination rate among health workers is quite high. However, about 10% of medical staff remain very skeptical. The lack of testing is one of people's main concerns. We are observing the effects of the vaccine while it's being administered.
A poll released in mid-December caused surprise in Italy by showing that one-third of the population were not willing to be vaccinated, along with half of nurses and other health workers.
I have my reservations over the vaccine because the matter has not been discussed much yet. I would have injected only if it becomes obligatory.
New polls are showing the scenario seems to have changed in recent days, with more Italians willing to receive the coronavirus vaccine. Medics promoting anti-vaccination propaganda have been warned or disciplined by doctors' associations.
Doctors' guilds in Italy have been conducting inquiries into medics accused of unwarranted criticism of vaccinations. Tens of medics have been punished with measures ranging from warnings to two-month suspensions.
Doctors' guilds' actions being timely and appropriate. Unfortunately, some medics should be trained on how to express their views on social platforms, as they aren't aware of the consequences of their inflammatory posts.
Meanwhile, a joint report by the Health Ministry and the Higher Health Institute is warning the COVID-19 epidemic in Italy risks becoming uncontrolled as the virus RT reproduction number has been increasing for 5 weeks straight. The country's COVID-19 death toll has risen to over 81,000. Max Civili, Rome.
Across the United States, local newspapers are running the same headlines. A record-breaking year in murders. Not since the ruinous crack cocaine epidemic have poor areas been so culturally and emotionally devastated by violence. The coronavirus lockdowns in the United States were widely criticized for being enacted without any apparent consideration as to how it would affect their lower classes. Adding lockdowns on top of bad housing, lack of access to food, police brutality, and other endemic problems put unbearable stress on those who could least afford it. The tremendous economic suffering also decreased the revenue of America's rampant gang activity, which many allege is aided by corrupt cops, and sparked increased fighting over market share. But Chicago, the nation's third largest city, is indicative. Almost half of all shootings here took place in just 7% of neighborhoods, which are dominated by poor African and Latino Americans. These areas don't just lack schools, jobs, and health care, they even lack sidewalks and garbage cans, because both private banks and the government refuse to make even basic investments.
The solutions remain what they have always been. The solutions remain investment into neighborhoods. The solutions remain accepting authentic leadership that people will listen to, because these leaders have the best interest of the people in mind versus leaders who cooperate and who are co-opted by the system. If you really want change, you have to do something different. That means there has to be more focus on the value of human life, less focus on the value of stock market.
But the blame can't be put all on Corona. 75 of the 100 largest cities in the country saw an increase in fatal shootings in the first quarter of 2020. American poverty and instability have soared since the 2008 economic crisis, but America's disregard for the poor of all colors goes back much further.
The solution remains in America looking into the mirror and seeing the ugly side of who she is and making a decision to change, making a decision about where to put money, making a decision about how much money to be placed, making a decision about holding police officers and other powerful figures in government and in society accountable for their wrongdoing, and really caring for the development of the American people versus those who are at the top of this oligarchy, which poses as a democracy.
The highest year-to-year increase in murders ever recorded across urban America was 13%. 2020 saw an estimated increase of nearly 40%. The decision of the nation's political elites to not release a second household stimulus until after the presidential election is being widely blamed for increasing the unstable conditions which inevitably provoked the record tragedies of 2020. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Turkey started its massive COVID-19 vaccination program after the end of a 14-day testing period by Turkey's Medicines and Medical Devices Agency, which approved the jab. The first shipment Sinovac vaccine, consisting of 3 million doses, arrived in Turkey late last month. Turkey is scheduled to receive a total of 50 million doses. More than 300,000 healthcare workers took the vaccine across the country, with data from the health ministry revealing that Turkey has 1.1 million health workers who will be vaccinated within a month from now. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and Health Minister Fahrettin Koca and several members of the science board were the first ones to get vaccinated.
We aim to vaccinate all of our citizens as soon as possible. The number of vaccines in the first stage is clear. Now another 25 to 13 million doses will come in the period ahead. We want to continue this rapidly. I get vaccinated as well.
Those who were vaccinated will take the second dose of the vaccine after 28 days.
The coronavirus spread needs to be contained, and the Turkish government has already managed to contain it through various measures. And now, with the arrival of the first batch of the vaccine, it seems that Turkey will be ready to fold this page by the end of February, as the president announced. By that time, everyone will be vaccinated.
Preliminary studies involving more than 7,000 volunteers in Turkey showed corona vaccine to be 91.25% effective. Turkey has reported about 2.34 million infections and around 23,000 deaths. The country has imposed weekend lockdowns and evening curfews to fight the surge in the cases. Turkey is set to carry out the vaccination in four stages, with health workers, elderly, disabled, and adults living in crowded places to take the vaccine in the first stage. Rahşan Saglam, Istanbul.
In March 2015, Saudi Arabia and some of its allies launched a war on Yemen. Their main aim was to throw out the Ansarullah movement and reinstate former president Abd Rabbu Mansour Hadi, who had fled to Saudi Arabia after resigning. The war that so far had killed tens of thousands of Yemeni civilians has been described by the UN as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. But right from the beginning, it was the United States and its Western allies that supported the war in different forms, either by supplying weapons to Riyadh or undermining the situation in Yemen. With only a few days left for US President Donald Trump in office, he is still trying to do the most harm to the Yemeni people and offer political assistance to his Arab ally, Saudi Arabia. On Monday, the US designated Yemen's Ansarullah as a terrorist group. Washington said the decision will take effect on January 19th, a day before Trump hands over power to his successor, Joe Biden. The move has drawn criticism from the international community and rights groups. UN officials have also opposed the designation, citing humanitarian impact and dire consequences for the peace process in Yemen.
I am extremely concerned about the impact of the decision from the United States to designate Ansar Allah as a foreign terrorist organization. We fear, in my mission, that there will be inevitably a chilling effect on my efforts to bring the parties together.
During a UN Security Council briefing, World Food Program Chief David Beasley also slammed the decision and called on the US to reverse it.
We are struggling now without the designation. With the designation, it's going to be catastrophic. It literally is going to be a death sentence to hundreds of thousands, if not millions.
The US and some other Western countries are major suppliers of weapons to Saudi Arabia and have been supporting the war on Yemen since day one. Saudi bombardments have already devastated Yemen's infrastructure, turning many schools, hospitals, religious sites into rubble. But the Trump administration never heeded calls by rights groups and politicians inside the US to stop supplying arms to the kingdom. The United States has a history of military adventurism in West Asia. The Saudi-led war is part of a wider American plot to destabilize the region. Will Biden do something to stop the Saudi mayhem or follow the footsteps of his predecessor? That's what the world will be watching in the coming weeks.
The port of Hodeida, which is the only outlet to the outside world for millions of Yemenis, is still suffering from a forced closure imposed by the Saudi-led coalition. This has caused thousands of workers to lose their jobs, increasing the rate of poverty and unemployment in the coastal governorate.
The workers at the port of Hodeida include 3,500 workers in the port and 500 others in other fields of the port. These support a family, and the closure of the port has eliminated the source of income of these people. The suspension of operations of the port has affected the lives of all Yemenis who depend on the port for the arrival of food and medicine.
This port is the only outlet for millions of Yemenis to receive essential supplies, and its continued closure means they can't easily have access to adequate food and medicine, not to mention the large economic losses for the Yemeni economy, estimated at over $1 billion.
The port of Hodeida is one of the important ports in the Red Sea, and direct and indirect corporate losses are estimated at $1.24 billion in total. This is a large sum, since the Red Sea Ports Corporation is responsible for 70% of the imports sent to the 20 governorates for more than 20 million Yemenis.
Yemen has been suffering from a sea and air blockade since the Saudi-led coalition launched its war in March 2015, which has destroyed the country's infrastructure, killed tens of thousands of civilians, and starved millions of women and the children. As the Saudi war on Yemen approaches its seventh year, Yemeni's calls for the demilitarization of Port of Hodeida continue to be ignored by the United Nations and other relevant international organizations. From Port of Hodeida, Abdul Latif Al-Washali.
Turkey has the longest continental coastline in the eastern Mediterranean and rejects the maritime boundary claims of Greece and the Greek Cypriot administration in the region. Ankara says these claims are excessive and violate the sovereign rights of both Turkey and Turkish Cypriots. The EU decided on punitive measures against Turkey last year after Ankara asserted its rights in the region by sending several drill ships to explore for energy on its continental shelf. However, the implementation of sanctions has been postponed until March, and Turkey says it is ready to get its relationship with the EU back on track in 2021.
We are inviting Greece, which has been increasing its airspace violations and unlawful activities in islands that are demilitarized, to give up their actions that are raising tensions. I believe that the exploratory talks with our neighbor Greece, which will start on the 25th of January, will, God willing, herald a new period.
European diplomats have signaled the dispute between Turkey and Greece is of paramount importance and also that progress has already been made.
What I have felt from my discussion with the minister Mevlut Cavusoglu is progress has been made too,
both in the way of relations between Turkey and Greece and in relations between Turkey and Cyprus and in relations between Turkey and France, to give you some examples. Another issue high on the agenda for talks is Turkey's EU membership bid. Negotiations began in 2005, but have since come to a standstill. Erdogan says Turkey's membership will be a good thing for the EU, now Britain has left the bloc.
Uncertainties that are increasing with Brexit can only be dissipated with Turkey receiving its rightful place in the European family. We, as a country, are ready to put our relations back on track and create positive agendas with a long-term perspective.
In recent talks, Turkey has been quick to remind the EU of its dependence on Ankara when it comes to preventing hundreds of thousands of refugees and migrants from trying to cross into European nations. Turkey says by taking initiatives in places like Syria and Libya, it is contributing to the EU's security considerably and is calling on the bloc not to allow disputes with individual members like Greece and France to jeopardize that. Bianca Rahimi, London.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
A study by the Balkans and Europe Policy Advisory Group published before the regional vaccination campaign started in December concluded that coronavirus conspiracy theories are believed by nearly 80% of citizens of the Western Balkan countries striving to join the European Union. It said about half of them will refuse to get vaccinated. Some theories say the virus isn't real or that it's a bioweapon created by the United States or its allies. Another popular story holds that Microsoft founder Bill Gates is using COVID-19 vaccines to implant microchips in the planet's 7 billion people. Similar trends have been seen in even some Eastern European Union countries. The article we're about to present you has been written jointly by Dusan Stojanovic and Jovana Gek under the heading Vaccine Skepticism Hurts East European Antivirus Efforts. The article has been taken from the Associated Press News Agency website. vaccines from the West, Russia, or China, or none at all. That dilemma faces nations in southeastern Europe, where coronavirus vaccination campaigns are off to a slow start, overshadowed by heated political debates and conspiracy theories. In countries like the Czech Republic, Serbia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Romania, and Bulgaria, vaccine skeptics have included former presidents and even some doctors. Serbian tennis champion Novak Djokovic was among those who said he did not want to be forced to get inoculated. Some believe that the coronavirus is a hoax, or that vaccines could inject microchips into people have spread in the countries that were formerly under harsh communist rule. Those who once routinely underwent mass inoculations are deeply split over whether to get the vaccines at all. A recent Balkan study warned there is a direct link between support for conspiracy theories and skepticism towards vaccination. The report added, a majority across the region does not plan to take the vaccine, a ratio considerably lower than elsewhere in Europe, where a majority favors taking the vaccine. Only about 200,000 people applied for the vaccine in Serbia, a country of 7 million people, in the days after authorities opened the procedure. By contrast, 1 million Serbians signed up for the €100 on the first day the government offered the pandemic aid. Hoping to encourage vaccination, Serbian officials have gotten their shots on television. Yet they themselves have been split over whether to get the Western-made Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine or Russia's Sputnik vaccine. More divisions in a country that is formally seeking East European membership, but where many favor closer ties with Moscow. Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić recently greeted a shipment of 1 million doses of the Chinese Sinopharm vaccine, saying he will receive a shot to show that it is safe. A recent headline of the Informer, a pro-government tabloid newspaper, read, Serbs prefer the Russian vaccine. Officials announced that 38% of those who have applied to take the shots favor the Russian vaccine, while 31% want the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. A rough division among pro-Russian and pro-Westerners in Serbia. In neighboring Bosnia-Herzegovina, a war-torn country that remains ethnically divided among Serbs, Bosniaks, and Croats, politics also are a factor, as the Serb-run half appeared set to opt for the Russian vaccine, while the Bosniak-Croat part of the country likely will turn to the Western vaccine. Sasan Milovanovic, a 57-year-old real estate agent from Belgrade, sees all vaccines as part of the global manipulation of the pandemic. He said, people are locked up and they have no lives any longer and live in a state of hysteria and fear. Novak Djokovic has said he was against being forced to take a coronavirus vaccine in order to travel and compete, but was keeping his mind open about vaccination. The top-ranked tennis player Djokovic and his wife tested positive in June about a series of exhibition matches with zero social distancing that he organized in the Balkans. They and their foundation have donated €1 million to buy ventilators and other medical equipment for hospitals in Serbia. Meanwhile, the Serbian health ministry official Mirsad Jelek has described the vaccine response as satisfactory, but cautioned on the state-run RTS broadcaster that people in rural areas usually believe in conspiracy theories and that it is why we should talk to them and explain that the vaccine is the only way out of this situation. A study by the Balkans in Europe Policy Advisory Group, published before the regional vaccination campaign started in December, concluded that virus conspiracy theories are believed by nearly 80% of citizens of the Western Balkan countries, striving to join the European Union. The report said about half of them will refuse to get vaccinated. Some theories say the virus isn't real or that it's a biological weapon created by the United States or its allies. Another popular story holds that Microsoft founder Bill Gates is using COVID-19 vaccines to implant microchips in the planet's 7 billion people. According to the Balkans think tank, a low level of information about the coronavirus and vaccines, distrust in governments, and repeated assertions by authorities that their countries are besieged by foreigners helps explain the high prevalence of such beliefs. Similar trends have been seen even in some Eastern European Union countries. In Bulgaria, for example, widespread conspiracy theories hampered past efforts to deal with a measles outbreak. Surveys there suggested distrust of vaccination, and that remains high even as coronavirus cases keep rising in Bulgaria. A recent Gallup international opinion poll found that 30% of respondents want to get vaccinated, 46% will refuse to get vaccinated, and 24% are undecided. Bulgarian doctors have tried to change attitudes. Dr. Stefan Konstantinov, a former health minister, joked that people should be told neighboring Greece would close resorts to tourists who don't get vaccinated because this would guarantee that some 70% of the population would rush to get a jab. In the Czech Republic, where opinion surveys show that some 40% reject vaccination, protesters at a big rally against government virus restrictions in Prague demanded that vaccinations not be mandatory. Former President Václav Klaus, a fierce critic of the government's pandemic response, told the crowd that vaccines are not a solution. The 79-year-old Václav Klaus, who insists that people should get exposed to the virus to gain immunity, which experts reject, said, "They say that everything will be solved by a miracle vaccine," he added. "We have to say loud and clear that there is no such a thing. I'm not going to get vaccinated." Populist authorities in Hungary have taken a hard line against virus misinformation, but rejection of vaccines is still projected at about 30%. The Hungarian parliament passed emergency powers in March that allows authorities to prosecute anyone deemed to be inhibiting the successful defense against the coronavirus, including fear-mongering or spreading false news. At least two people who criticized the government's response to the pandemic on social media have been arrested, but neither of them has been formally charged. Romanian Health Minister Vlad Voiculescu said he's relying on family doctors to inform, schedule, and monitor people after the vaccine, and that his ministry will offer bonuses to medical workers based on the number of people that they get on board. Asked if such incentives would fuel anti-vaccination propaganda, the Romanian health minister, Vlad Voiculescu, said, "I'm interested more by the doctor's view on the matter than I am about the anti-vaxxers." Dr. Ivica Jeremic, who has worked with virus patients in Serbia since March and tested positive himself in November, hopes vaccination programs will gain speed once people overcome their fear of vaccination or their fear of unknown. He said, "People will realize the vaccine is the only way to return to normal life."
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars from IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints you are listening to. And with me in the studio are two experts, two Islamic scholars from the Islamic House of Qom, Brother Ali Al-Abiyan and Said Mohsen Naghvi. This series of Viewpoints is concerned with the speeches and thoughts of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Before anything, let's say salam to the experts over here. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
You're welcome, and brother Al-Abiyan, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thanks for having me here.
You're welcome, brother. You know that 1 year have passed the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani, who was killed in a drone attack by the U.S. last year. And for the commemoration ceremony of this dear general of Iran, Brother Mahmoud, the producer of this program, tried to dedicate this series of the program to the speeches and thoughts of Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, about General Soleimani. Brother Ali, this istikbar, you know, and its breakdown in the region by Qasem Soleimani and ISIS, which really they spend lots of money in the region, but a man like Soleimani with some, we can say, barricades from strategies. Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iran, Fatemiyun, Zainabiyun, okay, comes to the scene and stop all these, we can say, money expenditure over there in the region. ISIS, you know, we know they were rich.
Very
their
true.
Military, we can say, facilities were really high and modern.
Very
so
true.
What's your take on that, brother?
Yeah, on the continuation of actually enumerating the features of the school of thought of Soleimani, I think we shall get to that point as well. We wanted to mention some other features that the fourth that we want to focus on today is his purity of intention that was actually pointed in our conversation, and not being a person of pretension and hypocrisy. It is quite clear for Iranians, those who have sensed him in the country, that even after his martyrdom, people understood what a great person he was. You know, he did not let those cameramen to broadcast whatever have been recorded from it.
That's right.
So these scenes of, let's say, purity of this person to be in different battlefields, not only in the battlefield of war, I don't know, against ISIS, but even at the time that, for example, he was needed in the flood of Khuzestan province.
Yeah, the natural disaster.
Natural disasters
in
different
right.
parts. In the north of
yeah.
Iran, again, we had some flood issues.
Yeah.
So he was present there.
He was
and
a social activist over there. That's
very
right.
true.
Okay.
So we see that this sort of activities seen from a general, a high-ranking general, cannot be seen in different countries and, let's say, different nations.
This
I don't
is
know
very much different from the generals who are very, we can say, sharp and serious, you know.
Very
the generals,
true.
Usually the military ones, are shown with the medals over the chest. Soleimani
yeah.
was not over there. Okay.
And the next feature of the school of thought of Soleimani was the spirituality, I can call it.
Mm-hmm.
What does this spirituality mean?
Mm-hmm.
Usually, colonels, generals, even if they are Muslims,
yes.
and specifically, let's say, the followers of the school of Ahlul Bayt, in the battlefield, based on some jurisprudential ahkam or, let's say, decrees, based on some fiqh issues, in some special cases, they are free from doing, for example, some of their obligatory acts.
That's
in
right.
very special cases.
Yes.
But this person actually tuned himself to even to adhere all those obligatory and even recommended actions that was on him to be done in its right time. And
yes.
he, parallel to that, he does his job actually exactly as it was required.
That's right.
So this person was a man of tahajjud and salat al-layl, the night prayer.
Mm-hmm.
So, even in, I want to compare to others. Let's say, how many do we have, for example, from armed forces to be, for example, in that, let's say, state of,
yes,
let's say, spirituality, yeah, and obedience towards God,
yeah,
which was expected to be seen from, for example, a religious scholar.
Mm-hmm.
So this person, in the, let's say, poems that he was reciting.
Being a religious man inside a mosque is very easy.
Yeah.
But being a religious man inside a field of military action is really difficult.
Very,
you know,
true.
And, yeah, when you are safe, okay, being religious is really easy.
Yeah. When he,
especially when you see your, like, men being killed by the enemies, okay, and you capture someone.
Yeah.
You need to, obviously, at that time, everyone is angry, especially we have seen, like, in different wars.
Yeah.
They do oppress those people, and Islam stops, like, from oppressing anyone, even the captives. Mm. And Qasim Soleimani has these characteristics that he never oppressed anyone. He never went beyond the, beyond the limits.
Yeah.
He was within his limits. And that's what, obviously, we need to learn from him. That how to be, you know. For example, we see like people, some people, unfortunately, when they go home, the husbands, when they're very much angry, they beat their, for example, wives.
Wow.
We have this oppression, like these things, like why this thing is happening with the women. It's because the people are going beyond their limits.
That's right.
And he, in the battlefield, is... He remained in his...
Of course, we do not recommend beating the women inside the house, okay? This is not
it's
at all...
It's just an example, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But the case is that...
One more case I want to mention, because it is related to our discussion that even Sayyid actually explained it. When he was sieged in Syria once, and he was obliged to stay, for example, in a house that was... And the people of the house were not there. He wrote a letter to the owner of the house that I prayed in your house, I think, two times
without your
permission, but it was it was out of my will, let's
That's
say.
Right.
And he asked him, in case you are happy with it, please accept my apologies. In case you do not agree, please, this is my phone number. Please call me so that I compensate for the time that I have been here in your house and I perform
That's
my
right.
prayers.
In another footage, he's talking about halal and haram.
Yeah.
You know, talking about halal and haram, especially in a war operation, is very difficult. We know that in all the operations that were led by Qasim Soleimani, no innocent, ordinary men or women or children were killed. None of them. By the Iranian forces, okay? But on the vice versa, I mean by Daesh and the ISIS, so many people were killed. He says that the lives of the people that you are operating in this operation are like the amana in your hands.
Very true.
So this amana or trust, as long as it is your hand, you have to take care of that.
And this line, again, remember the brothers and sisters who are listening, was taken from the teachings of Imam Khomeini while in the imposed 8-year war. Imam Khomeini, when we were under the missiles, Iraqi missiles, like the city, a city like Dasful, who received more than 1,600 missiles during the wartime. But Imam did not allow any of these army people to reply them back. He said, because they don't care if they kill ordinary people, but we don't want to kill ordinary people in the war. So this, look, this, the root of this, let's say, tactic is taken from, as you rightly mentioned in previous show, the leader, and the leader from the Imam.
Yeah, the love of human
beings. American drones, like, they kill many innocent people in Yemen, in Iraq, in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
They've killed many the innocent people, and they don't care about these things. So this is what we need to. Obviously, there must be some criteria for the general people.
Yeah.
The people who are listening, they need to make some criteria to choose between right and wrong. And obviously, the school of Qasim Soleimani has unveiled the reality of the Americans who so-called who call themselves as to be the ones who have raised the human rights flag.
Right.
So this is also one of the threats.
Another beautiful thing which was said by I do want to say that even in the opponent groups of the Islamic Republic of Iran outside, Qasem Soleimani was welcomed as a face who fought for an international integrity. This is very important because whenever they are criticizing Islamic Revolution of Iran or the policies inside, they say, okay, they are Muslims, they want to act as Islamic as possible and do not regard Iran. But Qasem Soleimani has shown that Iran and Islam both are important for him. This is very important, the weight that he gives to the Iranian people, regardless of their language, of their color, of their race inside Iran. He was really, we can say, the embodiment of Iran and the Iranian cultural values.
It's true that in case he was not in the battlefront, for example, in neighboring countries or in Lebanon or in Yemen or anywhere else in the world, the enemies were among us in the, let's say, western borders of our country. But it does not necessarily mean that he was helping them just to save Iran. No. I think in Islam, we don't have a geographical border. And even in his behavior, in pathological look in his behavior, it looks that he looked an Iranian exactly with the same eye that he was looking at Iraqi or Yemen.
Yeah,
or
thank you much, Brother Ali Alevian and Thayed Mohsen Naqvi for presence in the program. Viewpoints, it was very kind of you, dear listeners. Thank you much for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. Do not forget to visit our website, parstoday.com/Ian Kalav Islam page, also YouTube page, Kalav Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. اصطفاك واجتباك للخلود في دراك للقاك هل أعود أو وراك في سماك من جديد ذات يوم فيه قبري عند قبرك ويشم الناس روحانا بعطرك إن روحي الآن كم تشتاق وصلك قد تأخرت كثيرا توت بعدك من دماك لعلاك يا شهيد اصطفاك واجتباك للخلود في ثراك للقاك هل أعود أو وراك في سماك من جديد يبقى باب أشلاء يزار أو بقايا من وصاياي الكثار بالشهادات أنت حققت انتصار وانتظرت أنا لألحق بالمسار من دماك لعلاك يا شهيد اصطفاك واجتباك للخلود في تراك للقاك هل أعود وراك في سماك من جديد
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.